Beyonce Homecoming.
Oh, am I?
I was like a 98 or something.
That's kind of surprising. I don't know. I wonder what they're basing that on. I'd love to get the... Because it doesn't advertise on my home thing. I'm already recording, by the way.
Yeah, we can talk about Beyonce Homecoming.
Yeah, we just watched Beyonce Homecoming, which Kate tricked me into watching by saying, let's just watch a few minutes of it. And
classic switcheroo.
Two hours and 17 minutes later.
Yeah. And do you regret it?
No, I you
didn't
know,
think so.
I absolutely not. I think it was pretty rad.
It's fun. I'm part of the beehive, I guess one might say. Yeah. If they're identifying themselves as.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'd qualify as that. Maybe I will too one day. I don't know.
Next, if I have to fill out another batch of paperwork in my life, I'm gonna put in the other column beehive.
Yeah, under religion or.
Or like ethnicity, if that makes less sense. Yeah. But religion makes way more sense. All right, so. This is a podcast about Beyonce that we do.
Hi, this is Coos. This is the Beyonce podcast where we talk about Beyonce and
every single week.
Say that how much we like her and how talented she is, and you know.
And hold up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we should just do what we do.
So this is Cahoots. I'm Ben.
I'm Kate.
And you know, we're just here. We're doing our thing. My cat just came out. He's going to try and squeeze in next to us on the couch. We got another title we're going to try and do. This is, in case you're somehow not aware, this is the podcast where we come up with titles and try to, you know, come up with movies that are funny or clever or stupid or whatever based on those titles. And so we have one today that this one definitely comes courtesy of our friend Colin. Who got it from, I think we made a reference to Brutalist Architecture in a few episodes prior. I don't remember exactly which episode that was.
I also don't recall that, but I do like Brutalism.
Me too. And I was actually really pleased when on the long Chapo episode about the CPAC thing that like they got into a fight with like some like sort of alt-right guys that insulted them by saying, "I bet you like Brutalist Architecture." Apparently,
which
that's
is a deep
weird...
cut. That's like a weird, yeah. That's a bizarre.
Well, because all those guys really like classical, like antiquity stuff. Like they're really into like, you know, like Roman sculpture and stuff like that. And so like, I guess it's just postmodern enough to be like the enemy of their fucking bullshit like cultural heritage.
But that's also
concept.
Just like, yeah. I get the origin of that. That
it's still
inclination,
weird.
But it's also just like you're gonna bring like architectural details and into politics. It's so silly. It's funny.
It's funny. But, it's just nice when people like you and I who just happen to already like Brutalist Architecture and didn't know it was like putting us on the side of a political debate among between shitheads and you know.
Yeah, it's a divisive nice. It's a divisive topic for sure.
So all that said, the title that Colin suggested was The Brutal List.
Yes, which is Mean Girls could have been called The Brutal List.
Oh, that's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it immediately calls to mind the fantastic Ben Wheatley film Kill List, which is one of my favorite horror films of the past, I guess, decade or whatever it's been since that movie came out. Which could have also been called The Brutal List, but I think it's a little clunky of a, it's a mush mouth thing for that particular movie, but I like it as a thing. Brutal List. The Brutal List. What would you do? I mean, you know, like what would that be if you had to make it whole cloth right now?
Brutal, if I had to just make the movie?
Yeah, I mean, just like thinking of it separate from other things, but I don't know.
I mean, you could also do... You could do just like a revenge style movie where someone's just brutal and,
mm-hmm.
but like also the wink and nod is that it is like the architecture world. So, I mean, we're talking like Children of Men. We're talking, Blade Runner's famous for
sure.
Really famous brutalist architecture.
So it's like, it's like Taken, but he's an architect instead of a...
Yeah, or like John Wick or something.
Yeah. No, I actually kind of like that. If it's like, if it's just like, it's almost like if you don't know any better, you're watching a movie that like is just about like this guy getting revenge, but it just happens to be filmed in all these really distinctive, you know, like settings, these like distinctive locations, these buildings and stuff. And if you do know better, you recognize that it's all like, you know, brutalist architecture, that it's sort of like, you know, which you can kind of just do that anyways without having to call it that. But like,
I also could see, I mean, there's whoever the predominant brutalist architect is, like, you'd have a movie called The Brutalist about them.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, could be like a biopic kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, who was the person who really, I can't even name you a name.
Yeah, I have no idea. But if it was like one of those things that was like, it was like about like the, you know, the five most significant, you know, buildings that person designed, and so like, yeah, it's the list, the brutal list, the five, you know, the list of five buildings or something like that, and so it's like a sort of narrative that's built around that or something on some level. I could see that.
I mean, there also might be like there was a lot of you know, the international style movement of architecture, which was earlier than brutalism, fed into the modern architecture, what we know like the mid-century modern. It was a quilting circle of like, you know, 10 dudes. Mm-hmm. And there's so much drama that like that rivals your, you know, mom's wine club. I swear, it's crazy. It's like someone needs to make a movie that's just like about those guys.
Mm-hmm.
So I guarantee you there's something in like brutalism that's,
oh sure, yeah,
you know what I mean, there's got like, yeah, there's some, yeah,
like whatever the sort of core posse of the thing, yeah, like of that particular movement. And so it's like if it was almost like not like an anthology film, but like a sort of like anecdotal collection of like, you know, sort of incidences of that sort of thing. Like there's a this is unrelated at all, but like kind of there's a book called, I think it's called the, is that called The Hellraisers or something like that? But it's something like that. It's a book that's just drinking stories about Oliver Reed and Peter O'Toole and Richard Burton and Richard Harris, I think. And it's just like, it's like, yeah, because they were actors around the same time. They all drank and like did crazy shit. And so it's like a book that's just about those stories. So it's like if you had like The Brutal List was, if you just got the grouping of whoever the key figures in that were, and it's just like a sort of anecdotal film about like different things about how they lived and how they contributed to this particular style and conceptual idea.
Yeah, I mean, and also just, I mean, it's like ultra minimalism, but with like a kind of Soviet, cold Soviet edge to it.
Sure.
Like that's the, it's a very, which actually comes full circle back to MAGA interest. So I feel like it's just a real,
yeah,
it's a real
weird
toss up when you, it's, when you're talking about,
well, like
what side of architecture represents your political views.
I could also see a movie called The Brutal, like High Fidelity could have, mm-hmm, been called The Brutal List, because that's like the sort of like, it gets buried a bit in that movie, but like the kind of conceit of that movie is that he goes through a breakup and starts to go back through his past to like, you know, the different relationships he's had to try and sort of like get a handle on himself or something. And it's like, who was he? And the thing, and it's like, if the brutal list was like somebody having to go through, mm-hmm, in order, some, I don't know if it needs to be like, you know, X's, or if it needs to be like, you know, like the bucket list or something, you know, not that, but like the reverse version of that, where like the movie, The Bucket List, is like, you know, you're dying and you're, what are all the crazy shit you're going to do before you die? And it's more like somebody having to go back through some of the worst experiences they've had. It's like somebody with like PTSD or something like that, you know, having to sort of walk backwards through their life, through the most like, you know, miserable relationships or miserable encounters they've had with other people, and to try to sort of, you know, relive them or make amends or, you know, something like that. You know, I could see that being called like an AA, you know, drama where it's like making amends, and it's, mm-hmm, like, oh, well, it's like, you know, that's going to be brutal. Let's make a list of all the people I need to make amends with. Like, that kind of thing.
What if you, like, had some accident, you know, where you lost your memories, but there was one type of memory that mm-hmm. you got, one column, let's say,
and one flavor of memory,
and it was the shitty ones. It was the brutal memories, like you don't have your
the ones that are like
positive
like
ones
etched most, like yes, like so, violently into the
and
cortex.
So in this
yeah.
movie, it's like this is a real, you know, just fun loving weekend banger. No, this is, but in this movie, this guy like he wakes up, and so he thinks like. Oh, this is actually kind of, this
yeah,
might be kind
go,
of cool.
Go.
Because he's having these, and he's trying to piece it together. He's trying to mm-hmm. figure out who these people are and these horrible fucking, and they range from just like dumb, horrible stuff to like bad stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That just is heartbreaking. And it doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, violence or death, but just like heartbreak and whatever. Mm-hmm. So, but it can also be violence and death.
Degradation, misery, despair.
But I love the idea that like, the one that like it, you know, you have the romance element of it where like he just this there's this woman that that keeps popping up in his brutal list of memories, and mm-hmm. he's like, she's the worst person ever, and you know, it's like it's clearly his love or something. So mm-hmm. We're talking now as a sort of bit like Eternal Sunshine,
sure
where it's like he thinks this woman, like his initial, when he wakes up, he's like, this woman's a villain. And like, she's a horrible person. Cause all I have, I mean, she represents the worst of my
mm-hmm.
brutal list of memories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then we find out that he's actually in love with it. Cause he has to go find these people. He has to be like, are these?
Sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's it.
No, I mean, that I think like, it's like, if it's hard to like, it's hard to exactly imagine how you would visualize it.
Kind of Memento, I guess. I don't know.
But the idea that if you lost everything but the most like dug in, like hard, you know, burned, like negative, brutal memories, right? And so if you could imagine, and again, I don't know how you sort of like see this on screen, but that like somebody who is trying to recapture a sort of holistic sense of the mental landscape of which that made them a person, but they only have the worst memories.
Because
like the most traumatic memories are oftentimes like the ones that you actually forget. Like your brain sort of protects you from that to some degree. Like that's what, you know, like when you talk to somebody and they don't remember, you meet those people, they're like, oh, I don't remember my childhood up until like age 7. It's like, my first thought is always like, oh my God, you had some horrible shit happen to you in your childhood. And it's just like self-preservation kind of thing. So if this is the opposite where it's like you've forgotten all the lighter things, like all the lovely things, all the sort of innocent things and stuff, and you only have those to go on. But so in order to recapture the sort of, you know, matrix of your identity, you have to go back to the worst things. And again, you're reconnecting to them. It doesn't mean you're reliving them, but finding that like the sort of positive Eternal Sunshine type narrative of the whole thing would be that actually starting from those horrible places is how you start to retrace your steps to the positive things.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he has to go out there and meet these people. He has to find them first. He has to ask them who they are. Like, and so some of them, like maybe he has a loose context for like, oh, this guy's my brother or something. But, mm-hmm. And he's got to insert himself in their lives and try and piece things together.
Yeah. Cause it's like, if you imagine like the worst breakup you ever had, or like the most, you know, like dramatic, horrific, you know, kind of like experience with somebody in a romantic level, and you went and found that person again, they obviously wouldn't want to see you. But if somehow you could like, if the understanding that like, no, like literally I only
you
remember
revealed.
You because you, it was that bad, but I don't remember anything else. And so like almost like having to have that person sort of help you remember that, like, well, you don't get to that point of how horrible it is if there wasn't something good to begin with. And like, to, you know, like that person sort of having to tell you or help you remember the good parts of it. Like, yeah, that's, I mean, there's something that's like, it's a cool therapeutic, you know, conceit for a movie that, again, it's really hard for me to imagine exactly how you sort of show it all, but on a conceptual level, it's interesting for sure.
I got that covered.
Yeah, you got it?
Yeah.
Cool.
So,
Brutalist.
When are we making Brutalist?
I mean, you know, the Sundance Film Festival is waiting.
They're knocking.
I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, is there, like, another high concept-y thing that would be called that? I mean, like, it's like, you said the Taken or sort of John Wick thing. Like, I'm trying to think if there's something like more like Crank, where there is like a concept, you know, because like in Crank, it's like, you know, he has to do like things to keep his adrenaline going. So it's like if the brutal list was like, you know, there's some kind of like.
Like he's got to kill.
Yeah.
Like, no, not that.
Well, it's like, yeah, it would be like some sort of escalating level of violence that has to continually be attained or maintained, or like, you know, like that in order to accomplish some end or other, you know what I mean? Like something like that. That's like, so that it was called like the brutal list, you know, that you're sort of signing up for this like fucking crazy, like Paul Verhoeven style, like, you know, just totally violent, insane thing. I don't know what that is though. I don't know why that, because even in Crank, it's a little bit of a like, it's kind of like, oh, they gave him this like weird Chinese drug that's going to make it. It's like they come up with some reason why that needs to be the thing. And so like, I guess looking for the MacGuffin that makes the brutal list work is a little bit of a fool's errand, because ultimately people just want to see the thing, but.
You know. They just want, show me the list. Show me the list. I already bought it in the room, so I'm good.
You got anything else?
Do we have what's on our list?
What do we got? Where did it go? I mean, was it Meat Drama? Was that one of the ones we talked about? Meat Drama. I don't remember where that one came from.
I'm going to blame you.
It was something somebody said, I think.
No, it's definitely probably me, because it just sounds, it's like something dumb, I would say.
I mean, all the ones that have meat.
That's great.
All the ones that have meat in it, I do think are kind of yours. I know what Meat Drama would be.
What
hit it? It's another one of these, like, you know, pick two funny people and put them in a movie. And so whether it's The Rock and Kevin Hart, or it's Will Ferrell and, you know, Chris Rock, I don't know. It's like you pick two, you know, sort of mismatched, but, you know, well-beloved people. And it's two best friends who, and this is sort of a riff, it's sort of a rip off of that Simpsons episode, but I think no one really gives a shit. It's two like friends that both end up planning barbecues on the same day, and they try to outdo each other for barbecues. It's like the Flanders and the Homer barbecue thing.
Yes,
but it's like, but you do classic. But it's more of a two-hander. It's not just like Homer trying to beat Flanders at his barbecue thing. Cause they weren't even having it at the same time. It was like Flanders had a barbecue and didn't invite Homer, and he got jealous and like did his own. He's like, well, I'm gonna do my own barbecue to beat you. And then he's like, oh, can I come? And he's like, of course, don't, you know, like it was like, so, but this would be like, it's like almost like they're next door neighbors, or they are like on the same block, and somehow or other they both ended up planning barbecues on the same day. So it's like, I mean, I'll go ahead and flop the two things and say it's like Will Ferrell and The Rock, like those two. So it's like they're like so sort of like neighbors, friendly neighbors, but they end up somehow in this competition. So the Meat Drama is,
well, I think they secretly hate each other. They hate each other out loud to their wives, but not to,
yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah, so that there's, they already, I think, yes.
So there's something, yeah, I don't know, yeah. So either you start them off as like, you know, sort of frenemy kind of things at the beginning, and then by the end somehow they become friends, or you start them off as like actual friends, and then a misunderstanding drives them apart, and then they, you know, go at each other and somehow reconnect at the end. I'm not sure which one it is, but like the idea that they're each going to, like, you know, whether it's like, it's gonna, whether it's like a barbecue cook-off where they're gonna actually compete, you know, and see who's like, who makes the better. You know, they are like, you know, like bragging to each other about who makes the best brisket or like whatever the hell it is. I don't know enough about grilling and barbecuing or whatever, but like something like that. So it's like a very like, it's like a movie that largely takes place over the course of a day. Like probably the entire like second half of the movie is just the day of the big thing. And there's like the other stuff's like build up to it. That's the first thing that comes to mind in terms of Meat Drama.
There's one thing I miss from childhood is having my doorbell constantly rung with some salesperson selling knives or forks or
steaks.
steaks. Mm-hmm. There are still people that sell like high-end meat.
They absolutely are.
Door to door. And I feel like meat drama could be about a meat guy.
Sure.
Who maybe drive like a Schwann's truck style. Mm-hmm. You know, he's riding around. He's got the best in the...
Like Omaha Steaks kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's all I got. But, you know, there's a world. There's a setting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of like Glengarry, Glen Ross, but they're all selling steaks instead of fake real estate or whatever.
Always be chewing.
Always be... I don't know. You beat me there. Or like, yeah, I mean, it's like that would be, that's another version of the thing where it's like a competing meat salesman thing. Like, because like Glengarry Glen Ross, it's sort of funny that like, you know, like Alec Baldwin comes in at the beginning and like makes this whole speech about sales, but it all just takes place over the course of one night. And in my mind, I'm always like, how many sales can they even make? It's like 6:30 when he gives the brass ball speech. And you're like, do people buy condos or like timeshares like at like 8:30 at night on a Tuesday? Like, but the idea that like you'd have like a sort of sales conference thing where it's like our two top sellers are going to go and like whoever wins gets the Cadillac or whatever, like that makes a lot more sense to me, where you're going to follow them around and they're going to sabotage each other, you know, and stuff like that. Like that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
I guess meat drama is just sort of inherently funny as a title. And so whatever it's going to be some sort of, you know, some sort of comedy between, you know, multiple people like competing, or it's like a thing where there's like they run out of a source of meat. Like if it's like a sausage thing and they like all the cows die and they have to, you know, it's like something where there's like the drama is that they're trying to pass off some animal as another animal in this sort of like meat. I don't know, whatever. I mean, this is really goofy.
I love it though. This one is it's not a drama.
No, meat drama is inherently a comedy, not a drama.
It's a very ironic title.
Yeah.
It's very deep.
There's probably more in it.
I mean, I'm sure there is a drag queen named Meat Drama out there.
Yeah, probably. He's probably just like, yeah, it's just like a sort of like fantasy biopic of a drag queen named Meat Drama. God, that is fucking funny.
So,
I mean, I'll say this. I think there's a lot of like very like sincere and interesting and richly textured independent films that are being made right now and about drag queens and that sort of the different cultures that have like, it's a popular thing now, right? Like because of stuff like the RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff. Yeah. Like it's a very interesting place for narrative and for character work and stuff like that. And so probably if you had enough like legit movies like that, if they actually get made and become popular. And so if meat drama was like the sort of walk hard of the sentimental drag queen story, yeah, you know, if that became enough of a trope and you needed to do a parody version, you know,
yeah,
then meat drama would be like your just pure comedy version of like, you know, the story of how, you know, whatever little Billy, whatever from so-and-so became, you know, the fabulous meat drama or whatever.
Our mystical third host, Annie. Yeah. Who has worked multiple seasons.
Oh, yeah.
She worked on one or two seasons of Drag Race. It's
got to be the best job ever.
It's so, she calls herself a glitter janitor. She's like, all I do.
Yeah, that's the main
is
role.
Just like, yeah. And she's like, you want to know who the most disgusting people are? She's like, imagine a frat house, but they like makeup. And like, you know, everything that goes along with that.
When you say disgusting, you mean in terms of like just
sheer the messiness.
Mess. Yeah.
She's and like, that, it's like every time they just open up palettes and lipsticks and it's like just, it's smeared and they don't care. She's like, they pull off their tuck tape from their crotch and like put it on the wall, like slam it up against the walls.
Whose job is it? Is it like, do PAs have to clean that stuff up?
I think it's a combo. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
But it's not her, right? Hopefully.
No. Well, so, I mean, she, I think in that if she's like doing props or set dressing, like art department, it's more about redressing for camera. Like,
yeah,
but
is that behind the scenes stuff?
Yeah. Or? But yeah, I mean, they, you know, it's all just a standing, that whole pink room where they all get ready and mm-hmm. stuff, the workroom or whatever they call mm-hmm. it.
I've never seen it. Work. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like a standing set, you know, flat. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it all has to get, you know, they come in, they do their thing, and then it's got to get cleaned up and reset for the next time they're in there, whatever the deal
that's,
is. So,
yeah, that's a rough job.
Yeah, I think that's, but she always jokes. She's like, they are the most disgusting. She's like, I love them. They're disgusting.
I mean, even I was thinking about that while watching Homecoming, of just like, every time she has an outfit change, just like, yeah, I mean, you know, you're rushing, you go back there, it's like, I mean, she's covered. And so, I mean, there's no way you can't perform like that and not be covered in sweat, and you're just flinging these like soaked clothes, and there's somebody's job to put those in a, you know, laundry bag or something. But it's like, imagine that it's like that, you know, that many people. I mean, I guess the dancers and stuff too in that case, but like, yeah, I mean, there's no way. I mean, that's just the reality of, you know, that's the business. That's performance.
That's showbiz, baby.
Yeah, that's showbiz, baby. What are you going to do? But yeah, when you think about, I don't think about, you know, tuck tape. That's not a phrase I was familiar with prior to about 5 minutes ago when you said it. But when you think about that, it's that's a real, that's the nitty gritty, you know?
Yeah, tuck tape. There's a lot of fun paraphernalia. Well, because she's like, they tuck, and then but then they do like foundation all over their body. Like every, you mm-hmm. know, because it's like they're.
Oh, well, sure. Make like even skin tone
totally.
Stuff. And
I mean,
look
the whole
like, yeah.
9 yards. It's just like. And the sort of, like, I feel like any woman who puts on just normal, like, average, like, some cream and powder and mascara and blush, it's like, you still look at your sink and you're like, what happened?
Yeah, and the number of tissues when you're taking stuff off and all this stuff. Yeah, no, it's a good point. But, I mean, the amount of makeup it would take me to make me look beautiful, I can't imagine. So, like, taking that on and off and all of the, you know, detritus of that experience.
I will say, and we are not sponsored by this cosmetic company.
But, you know, if you're listening and you want to, Kate's Kate's open for business here. Like.
Yeah, just I'm taking, you can, yeah, contact me, Kahoot's Podcast. I'm looking for endorsements across the board. I'm a semi-outdoorsy girl. mm-hmm. No, the Anastasia Beverly Hills makeup, though, is like, that's their sponsor. So they, you know, they give them a bunch of makeup mm-hmm. and.
And so you know.
Well, I've a few things have fallen off the truck. No, yeah, it's like
some samples wound up in your home.
Well, I like it. Basically, it's like anything gets open, they can't return, you know, but even if it doesn't get used. But like they have, those drag queens are proof that makeup does not budge. And I got to say. Give it up for Anastasia Beverly Hills. I don't know why I'm plugging this company now.
It's kind of just fun to do. Speaking of plugs, you know, we could plug just for the hell of it. He's never going to spend ad money, but Fade In screenwriting software has been a big hero of yours this past couple weeks.
Oh, yeah. Being able to import PDFs, just game changer.
Yeah, it's incredible. And you've kind of like, I won't say that you've fully made the switch, but you're at least using it in equal measure now, and you've gotten a couple other people to get on board.
Yeah, I just want that one.
That one feature. Well, Kent, we emailed you about that. Yeah. So if you know, like, obviously this is we don't need to call out something it can't do, but he was lovely about his desire to make it do the thing that you want it to do, and I think,
but
you know,
overwhelmingly awesome.
Yeah, and more affordable and more effective, and you know, for what it's worth. We mentioned it on a couple episodes ago, but the movie that I'm currently prepping that, you know, barring an act of God, will be shooting in 2 weeks, was written almost entirely. I think when we started writing it, I had made the switch and Luke hadn't yet, but somewhere after like draft one, Luke did make the switch. And so we've been developing Nighthouse and now prepping Nighthouse entirely and Fade In for the past 3 or 4 years, basically. And so on the Fade In website, there's a little page for like the movies that were produced, like, written and produced using Fade In, including, you know, Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi. I'm just hoping that one day one of my movies, you know, but Nighthouse would be a great one to be featured on that page, because, you know, I'm a proud user.
I believe the Evan, who was on our show, is a, well, I know he's a Phaedon user, but I believe his show was written.
I think so. And I don't know if I helped influence him on that or if that was a separate or simultaneous thing, but I certainly...
he is. He's a big believer.
He's a big believer. I'm pretty sure David Bruckner might be fully using it now. He's certainly using it when dealing with Luke and I, but I'm pretty sure he's fully using it. I think I pushed Ben Schifrin to switch maybe recently. I need to make a list of everybody I've converted, but I'm definitely like, that's one of my goals in this world.
Life.
Yeah. Just, so, you know, that's free advertising, Kent. We don't need.
Yeah. And Anastasia Cosmetics, Anastasia Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm. That's free advertising, but you guys are a bigger operation. You could slip Kate some more stuff if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I mean, unless maybe I do need it.
Well, they don't make tuck
maybe
tape,
I'll
so
go,
you don't
maybe
need
I'm meat drama, and maybe this is the origin story.
You need some meat drama. This is meat drama will be written and paid in.
Really tying it all together there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
While wearing some Anastasia eyeshadow or something. I don't know. That's the best I got.
Yeah.
To bring it. Yeah. So we definitely have some top tier... Ten, as RuPaul would say, tens across the board.
Yep.
Ideas there.
Yeah, meet drama as the sort of spoof drag queen life story is quite funny to me.
Yeah, no, that's good. Because, I mean, it is that. Yeah. It sounds like, at least.
Because it'd be, and it would be like, but it's like Vincent D'Onofrio as meat drama.
Oh my God.
You know what I'm saying?
It's the name, it's both the name of that drag queen, but also clearly speaks to.
Yeah.
The drama of the drag queen culture.
Yeah. No, I mean, just picturing Vincent D'Onofrio with like his eyes closed and his like head raised up, you know, with like glitter cascading down his like bald head, you know, like, oh my God.
So much glitter. Did you know that glitter lung is a thing, by the way?
I fucking believe it, man. Like I was at, I mean that, like, it's not even glitter. Like I saw the Flaming Lips play live when I was a freshman in college, and they had like confetti cannons, you know, like it's like the, almost like the sort of, you know, the remnants of like when you do hole punches, the little like circles. And it was like basically that they were, it was more or less that. And they were shooting those out of cannons. And I was in the front row, and I remember, like, you know, you're in the front row at a Flaming Lips concert and you're just getting covered in this stuff. There's also fire sparks that burn some of my friends. But, like, literally for the next, I'm not kidding, for the next, like, 5 years or something, I was still finding that confetti in pockets. I think I was wearing, I did the Woody Allen coat that I mentioned a couple episodes ago. I wore it at that show. And, like, that in the coat, in my jean pockets and things. And it's, like, that's paper. That's not even, like, stick. That's sticking to things. Just, like, little particles of things, if you're exposed to them enough, are just going to be everywhere. And the idea of glitter that is like,
I think
it's easy to just get it in stuff and breathe it. I can't imagine.
Well, and apparently, like, in the this has gone from Cahoots to just a PSA.
Well, this is a section in meat drama that he gets glitter lung and needs to overcome it.
I think it's apparently
this is like the cancer scare of the sort of biopic thing. Yeah,
because in the wall card version, this is definitely because I think there are people that are reporting, like, they go to raves, they go to, you know, like, usually, like, whether it be a drag show or something that's like, you know, specifically you know, super glittery, but like, that this is, if this is your regular thing and you're going to them, right, and like, there are people are starting to say, like, they're getting glitter lung. It's like, it's such a funny but sad but weird thing.
It's the punishment for living an awesome life,
a fabulous life.
Yeah,
this is the punishment for being fabulous.
I mean, it's like, you know, yeah, I mean, I think anything, and I mean, there was like I don't know, I know that, like, it's a common topic, like the popcorn lung thing.
Yeah.
I say as I just hit my Juul, which, by the way, 100 times less of that chemical in vapes than in actual cigarettes. So anyone out there who could shame somebody who's quitting smoking and goes switches to a Juul and says you're going to get popcorn lung, you're still drastically less likely to. Whatever. I don't know if it's the same thing as the guy who died from microwave popcorn. I don't know if that's where that comes from, but there was a dude who died because he was addicted to microwave popcorn, and like two or three times a day for years he would eat microwave popcorn, and one of his things was that he would open the bag like right out of the microwave and breathe it in because he loved the smell of the chemical butter so much. And that's how they figured out that like popcorn workers lung was a thing, because this guy was so, it was so intense that it was like, oh yeah.
Well, I think popcorn lung though isn't from ingesting it. It's from the people working in the factories handling the material that is activated by the microwave. So that like black gray charcoal looking panel that's in the side of the
bag. This was the first guy who wasn't a popcorn factory worker.
I see.
Who got it because he was just such a fucking fan. And it was literally because he was huffing the stuff out of the bag right away. And it's like, yeah, so you get these people who live life on the edge and discover new ways to like damage yourself. So yeah, if you've just been going to raves and drag shows and stuff like that for like, you know, every single night for 20 years, and you're like, oh shit, glitter lung is a thing. It's like, well, somebody had to expose themselves to that degree before we discovered it was a problem. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, big ups to the first person that tried an oyster, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, honestly.
And the first person that died after eating a death cat mushroom. And we're like, oh, that little white thing is quite powerful.
Somebody, you know.
Apparently it tastes good, too.
But it kills you? I'm unaware of this.
Yeah, death caps are like one of the most deadly foods. Death cap mushrooms, they kill you in a couple days, and they do it by inhibiting RNA. So basically your liver just slowly shuts down because your cells can't replicate to replace the old one. So it takes a couple days for you to die.
And this is just a naturally occurring
plant. Liquefies your liver. There was a story that ran, apparently there's a fungi expert. I don't know exactly what the name for that is, because I'm sure there's a specific one.
There is, but I don't remember what it
but
is.
Outside of just being like a botanist. But he's up in like, I want to say Portland or maybe Seattle, but I think maybe Portland. But he was tracking the death cap because it's very benign looking. It's got specific things if you know to look for it, otherwise it's just like this little white mushroom. And he was finding them in the cities, and so he spends this he's like retired or near retirement 60-year-old man who just walks around the city. Again, I want to say it's either Seattle or Portland, but he has signs, so every time he finds one he posts a sign just saying like, dogs, young kids, like here's what it looks like, I found them in this area. So like he'll go to parks and stuff and like, you know. But everyone stay woke is the—
that's terrifying. Or just, hey, how's this for one? Just don't eat mushrooms you find in the wild. That's a safe bet.
That's a pro tip.
That's a really I'd say that's a dismal way to sort of wind down this episode, but it's also like something I didn't know about. Now, granted, I'm not prone to just like picking wild mushrooms and eating them, but you know, in case you are, if you're like me and you didn't know that such a thing existed, I think it's probably good that we know that.
Yeah. Because you're going to need a liver transplant, 100%.
God, yeah. I mean,
if you eat one of those bad boys.
Jesus.
There could be a movie called Death Cap, too.
Yeah.
That's also just about a hat that you can't take off. That kills you.
Death Cap. It's just, the hat that kills. It's like, there's a movie called The Bed That Kills, I think is what it's called. So Death Cap, the hat that kills, yeah. What kind of hat is it, do you think? It's like a baseball cap?
It's one of those that has little—
It's a propeller beanie.
Yeah, propeller beanie with a—
And so everyone keeps putting it on because they think it's funny.
It's cute.
But they don't realize—
it's a death cap.
Yeah, it's the death cap. So it's like the ring. Like you put it on and you can't take it off, and 7 days later you die.
Boom.
And then it's like, but then somebody else finds it and they're like, oh, that's so funny, I should put that on. Oh shit, I can't take it off. 7 days later, oh my god, I'm gonna die. It's not really very dramatic of a conceit.
I think it's the best thing we've ever pitched.
Yeah, I think, you know what? I think it speaks for itself.
And the best way to end the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, death cap. There you go.
For cuties.
Yeah, death cap for cuties. Okay, wait. So we kept talking about the death cap mushrooms after we stopped recording, and And
I got almost all the way home, and then Ben said, come back.
Get back over here. No,
we gotta talk.
I was like, she was describing it, like what it looked like, and just it's the one of the most deadly, you know, like organisms in existence. And
but
I was
it
like,
just has a big smiley face on it. No.
Well, it's like, well, then it's like, I was in my mind, I was like, it's the black widow of mushrooms or something. And somehow, like, I just imagined it as like kind of like you know, like in an 80s, like in the, like, so like after like Jaws came out, you know, there's like, oh, like this deadly predator, and so there's like, you got like alligator or crocodile or orca, I think was, there's like a bunch of like, there's always like ripoff things. And so just like sort of imagining Death Cap as, I don't know what would have been the like legitimate movie, but that eventually it's like the idea that this is the world's deadliest mushroom, and that it's like a horror movie that's like about the mushroom that kills you.
Because mushrooms grow insane underground too. Like
sure.
The yeah. Like, but from here to, yeah.
But what I'm, this is not, it's, this would never be a real movie, but what I'm imagining is, it's almost like one of those Andy Warhol experimental films. So it's like the posters and the advertisements are Death Cap, the world's deadliest mushroom. It's like, it's a killer, like it's, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the actual movie is just like a static shot of this mushroom that just goes on for like hours until someone finally picks it and eats it. And then it's like, because like, it's only a killer in the sense that you have to find it and consume it. It can't like stalk you and like go, it's not like a shark that can hunt you. So just the idea that it would be like a horror movie where the suspense is just waiting for someone to stumble upon this deadly thing and eat it. And then I guess the camera would have to like follow them and see them die. But that like you would literally just watch a mushroom exist for a long time until someone found
it.
It's such a passive killer.
You could be
at
the mushroom's POV the entire time. So even in the stomach and as it travels down to its liver.
Sure, yeah. That would be cool, actually. It's an educational film.
Mm-hmm. Like that lady with the school bus.
Yeah, the magic school. Miss Frizzle.
Frizzle. We love Frizz.
Yeah. So anyways, that was it. It was just a horror movie about the world's deadliest mushroom, but that just means it sits and waits for you because it doesn't actually do anything. It's like Jaws, but with mushrooms.
Jaws, but with mushrooms is the best bet.
Yeah. That's it.
Like, can you imagine? Because, you know, like, I think there are species of mushrooms that, I think the largest, if you're talking like volume, like the largest organism is a mushroom.
Yeah, fungus is like the largest single because they're interconnected in the, you know.
Yeah. So like, what, this is what you do. You're like, what's something bigger than Jaws? Like, can you imagine a predator bigger than Jaws? Bigger than, what was the dinosaur shark?
The Meg or the
whatever. Yeah, it's like bigger than that, bigger than
Godzilla. The,
bigger than the Empire State Building, and then of course the executives are just sitting on the edge of their seats, and then you're like,
well, there
this, and then you flash up a photo.
Well, there was back when I was in like high school or something, and I can't remember what it's called. There was a movie that was like the trailer was like. And I don't remember how it was very carefully worded, but it was like, you know, there is a killer in, you know, somewhere that's like, you know, that's more, it wasn't successful, but like basically it was like advertising, like as though it was like a serial killer kind of movie that's like, this killer has killed more people than like any, you know, any other something. And it was like one of these things where it keeps kind of withholding on the information. And I remember like watching it with, and we're like, I'm like, well, what, like this is the Green River guy? I was like, what does it beat? No, it's like, what are you talking about? And then, like, the reveal is it was just an alligator movie. And it was, like, as if there was this one alligator that killed all these people. And it was, like, but they sold it as, like, you should be so scared of this thing. And I was, like, well, I'm never going to go to, like, wherever that alligator is and, like, the thing. But it was, like, yeah, it's, like, they've actually tried to market movies that way is what I'm saying. And that your version is much funnier. But it's, like, I wouldn't be shocked if there was a fungus horror movie. It's not my version where you have to literally wait for the one. But it's, like, if you had a fungus horror movie that you advertised it as, like, it's bigger than anything. It's the single largest organism, and it will, you know, can kill you and stuff. And like, yeah, that's totally what it would be. Also, I wrote a fungus zombie movie many years ago called Cargo that Luke and I wrote it. That it'll never get made, but it was a cordyceps movie where like it made zombies out of people.
Ugh, yeah. Oof, I hate that. That's like the fungus that grows out of ants' heads.
Yeah, but we did it with people.
Oof.
On an airplane. It was all set on an airplane.
That's good.
Yeah, it was a cool script, and it just never got made. It's one of the first things we were hired to write. Got paid $5,000 to write the feature film Cargo.
Look at that, kids. You guys want to be screenwriters?
Yeah, spend 3 years and write 7 drafts of a fungus zombie on a plane movie for $5,000.
Hollywood, baby.
And that's $5,000 before splitting it two ways and taking commissions out. I paid rent with that check once.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
I finally made it. I'm getting paid as a writer. Now I can pay rent once.
Yeah.
And maybe like, you know, dinner or something.
At McDonald's.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. All right. Well,
I'm glad we popped back in for that. So let's say goodbye again.
Surprise. Okay, bye.
Okay, see you guys.